have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here with a special guest episode. With me today, I have Damian Weinstein. He is a co-founder and managing partner. Wanted to make sure I got both of those correct, of Weinstein and Klein PC. Damian, welcome to the Business Broker Growth Show.
Awesome. Thank you, Jason. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. I know I say that in most episodes. Any regular listeners probably hear me say that all the time, but I'm always excited for every conversation. And this is a little bit different than the normal ones on the Business Broker Growth Show, because you're not a business broker, you're an attorney. And so any opportunity I have to talk with somebody around the transactional kind of environment of these business sales, especially from the legal side, is great. And of course, none of this is constituting legal advice. I'm sure you have that disclaimer. You probably have to say, but, you know, let's talk about kind of the evolution to how you got here.
Yeah.
With your involvement with transactions as a transactional attorney, which we'll talk about in a little bit, why that's so different than maybe other attorneys.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I feel like no pressure, because you mentioned fun and the fact that I'm an attorney with only a few seconds apart. So I feel like, you know, hopefully you didn't lose like half your viewership already. I will do my best. I promise everyone. We'll have some fun.
I know you will.
Thank you. So pretty interesting in terms of the transactional approach. And not many people know this. I don't hide the fact, but people just kind of assume, oh, you're a transactional attorney. You must have always been a transactional attorney. And the answer is no. I actually started out as a litigator, which is pretty interesting. And there's a lot of twists and turns to my whole career. I've been practicing law for almost 16 years at this point. And, you know, the litigation was interesting. It was something that I wanted out of law school. And once I started doing it, I realized I actually want no part of it. I don't want to be around litigators. I don't want to be a litigator. I don't want the judge mad at me, the client mad at me, the other side's attorney mad at me. Everyone's mad at you at all times. There's deadlines all the time. So I found my way to transactional work, which I'm going to gloss over all the details, but of course I'm happy to jump into any of that. And about 7 or 8 years ago, I started doing a little bit more transactional work and have ramped up since. And it's been fantastic. It's been a journey and a half. And again, I'm happy to unpack all of those details. But the transactional work is fun. It's exciting. You are oftentimes dealing with people buying businesses, selling businesses. Stressful, like any practice of law, any practice area, rather. But it's a little bit more exciting and I think forgiving in terms of the rigidity of what I'm used to from litigation as a more junior attorney.
It's so fascinating because, like, somebody who watches movies and TV shows thinks like, oh, litigation, that would be fun, like the courtroom mode and all of that and that pressure. But I can imagine, like, unless you're really cut out for it and you really enjoy that lifestyle and that mode, yeah, it's probably not as fun. It's different. It's interesting for you to say that the transactional stuff is more fun, because I feel like that's just maybe a different pressure. And maybe it's just a sign that it was just a better fit for you, because that, let's say, stress and pressure and dynamics is more in your mode.
I think that's right. I think you nailed
it.
I was going to say, and it's probably also a bit of a grass is always greener type of scenario. But it works for me. It works. It's my style of working more. The conversations can be happier when you have to call a client about a litigation. Even if it's good news, it's never a fun conversation. When you have to call a client about the sale of their business or the purchase of a business, more often than not, it could be a happy call, a good call.
Yeah, that makes sense. So with the transactional side, it's one of the things, and I know this can be the bane of a lot of business brokers' existence, right? Like, we think about that, is where they've got a client they're working with, business owner, wants to sell their business. Broker says, hey, so we need to get an attorney involved. Let's make sure everything gets reviewed. Don't worry, I have an attorney. They handled my S-corp formation or my divorce or whatever. Like, what's the big difference between a transactional focused and effective attorney versus let's say, other categories of attorneys?
Yeah. Oh God. Where do I begin? This could be the topic of conversation for like another 2 hours if we
Let's
want
go.
It to be. Fair. I guess we're in the right spot for that. You know, there are a lot of attorneys out there, believe it or not, right? Everyone, that probably surprises no one. But we're everywhere, right? There are a lot of business attorneys, and then there are a lot of non-business attorneys, and even within business attorneys, then there's the transactional attorneys. The problem is that you have a lot of people who dabble, right? And I'll spare everyone from the example of like, you know, you wouldn't go to a knee surgeon for a heart surgery or vice versa. We've heard that parable enough times, but it is true, right? And I think, you know, one of the issues there is you have people who kind of figure if they could do a contract, they could do a contract to buy and sell a business. If they could do any sort of, you know, entity formation, they understand how to do a contract, you know, that's for the purchase or sale of a company. It's a very different skill set. And I think what makes a good lawyer is understanding the right questions to ask and issue spotting. And I've preached this and I've talked about this with I have a younger niece who's thinking about going to law school, and I actually just had a very similar conversation with her as well. And you know, she asked not in these exact words, but she was kind of trying to figure out what makes someone a successful lawyer or a good lawyer. And I said, well, first of all, those are two very different things in and of themselves. But a good lawyer is spotting the issues. You don't need to know all the answers to every legal question or concept, but you need to be able to identify them and work through it or find someone else who knows that. And that's what I found the biggest difference between the lawyers who do transactional work for a living and the lawyers who kind of dabble here and there. They know which questions to ask, right? And again, I'm jumping the gun here probably a little bit, but we've had transactions where we'll ask the other side a question about a concept and they're like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And you're like, let's back up now. Let's explain what this concept is. And when you explain it to them, which is unfortunate you even have to do, then they can kind of look into it and figure it out, and maybe they get it right, maybe they get it wrong. But they don't even understand that that's a thing in the beginning, right? Reps and warranties or indemnification or whatever this may be, or post-closing liabilities, whatever these concepts are, you have to understand that they even exist. You don't know what you don't know. A transactional attorney has done these hopefully enough times that they know what they need to know, and they know where to, how to, you know, how to navigate those issues. So there's a huge difference. It's I'm involved with a lot of groups that are heavy on transactional attorneys, both small firms, mid-sized firms, bigger firms. And this is a topic of conversation that constantly comes up of just, hey, have you ever run into a deal with this attorney or that attorney? Oh my God, they're like, you go on their website and they do like personal injury, DWI, real estate, you know, bankruptcy, but they also apparently represent buyers and sellers of businesses. And you just know what you're gonna get when you deal with that type of attorney. No offense to those attorneys. I'm a big fan of everyone making a living. I'm not a big fan of having to teach other lawyers how to do this job and have my client be paying for my time for that to happen. That's not fair either.
Yeah, it's in, and like, I'm thinking about all the conversations I've had with business brokers on the show, off the show, talking to our clients, like just helping everything move forward, you know, especially with conversations. And it's interesting in what you're saying, because I'm thinking in the business broker world, one of the challenge for a business broker is knowing the questions to ask, which usually takes enough repetition and experiences, usually at the hand of not knowing what to ask and then learning it probably the hard way, unless you have a really good mentor, but like that experience. And I think in the business broker world, one of the banes of their existence also is, you know, when they talk to a business owner who's already got somebody helping them, and it's their friend of theirs that's a realtor that is also dabbling in trying to sell a business, right? And so that's what I think about as the correlation for what you're talking about, which is an attorney who's dabbling in the transaction stuff. And I love the two things you said, which is questions to ask, which again is the most important thing, and then issue spotting. So talk about the issue spotting is another thing, because I've never heard it phrased that way, but it's so important. It's really what, looking around corners, know what's going to happen, know what's coming, and handle it in advance.
Yeah. And again, without I'm mindful. I'm trying to keep, as we talk about law, trying to keep this exciting and interesting for people. But I'll risk that with what I'm about to say, which is this goes all the way back to law school, right? Law school doesn't really teach you how to be a lawyer. It teaches you how to think like a lawyer. What's the biggest thing of thinking like a lawyer is issue spotting, right? I mean, down to exams are oftentimes just giving you a fact pattern. All you have to do, I shouldn't say all you have to do, the first thing you have to do really is spot issues. You just need to understand, okay, this person rear-ended this person and then they fall out of the side of the car and then a truck comes along and runs that person over. Okay, now we have like five issues to identify. Why did they rear-end them? Was there speeding involved? Then the person gets out, then they get run over by this truck. You didn't see this, Jason, I could tell.
I did not.
You just, I told you, I'm trying. And then, you have to just identify all these issues. So you have to think 2-3 steps ahead at all times. And that's really what law school is good for. It's why I think lawyers, if I could go on a tangent for a second, sometimes are subject and prone to stress and anxiety because we're constantly thinking and identifying issues. That's just how our brains are trained, right? That's part of the training is to think, well, what could go wrong here? What could happen? If that happens, then that would happen. And then that would happen. And so, you know, it's a really, really important skill. It obviously has to be nurtured and implemented in a good way. But I think it's a good skill for anyone. It's just kind of thinking those few steps ahead, identifying the issues of where things can go wrong, and thinking through what can we do now so that that thing 3 steps ahead doesn't go awry. And that instead of going left, which we don't want to do, we want to go right with this transaction. What do we need to do now in order to make that happen, you know, in a week or two from now?
Yeah. And I mean, humans in general are prone to stress and anxiety because the primal part of our brain is always worried about two things. One is our own inherent survival in the world. And then the other one is our place in society and the tribe and our status and ultimately not getting kicked out of the tribe of humans and left out on our own in the world, which goes back to the first element, because out there in the real world, everything can and probably will try to kill us, right? Like we are not at the top of the food chain. We are just like really good at it as a group. And so it's interesting because humans already have that element in there where they're looking out for danger and stress and avoiding things. And then you add on the training, either the nature versus nurture of someone who goes into law because they're really in hyper alert or law teaches them to be constantly in that mode, which then takes me to the next part, which is where I know I, in all of my experience in business, working for companies and dealing with different things, is most lawyers, probably because of the issue spotting, our default mode is to say no to everything because everything is dangerous and nothing is going to work and nothing is compliant and everything has to be restricted. Like, especially you think of corporate law and things like that. It's like, nope, you can't do anything. Don't do anything. Every agreement is either really massive or really redlined. But that's counterproductive for the transactional side, where the goal of a transaction in general is for the transaction to occur, right? And so how do you balance that? Like, A, how did you shift? Obviously, you wanted to get away from litigation, but how do the transactional attorneys handle that better than like other categories of attorneys where your mode isn't in the no mode? It's probably in the, like, how do we do this? How do we ensure everyone is safe? How do we make sure this is like a good transaction?
Yeah, for those on video, I'm like furiously nodding my head in agreement because you went exactly where I was hoping this conversation would go. And that could be a reason why I found myself more comfortable in transactional work than litigation, because I'm yes, let's make this happen. Now we just have to figure out how to get in there, right? So there's a lot to unpack with what you just asked. It's such a good question, and your point is so well made. Transactional work is make it happen, right? A client comes to you oftentimes and they just want to make it happen, right? Whether it's a sell side deal, a buy side deal, or just a commercial agreement, right? We want to do this thing. And then they look to the lawyer to say, can we do it, right? A lot of lawyers are the naysayer, right? That is, again, you know, the risk averse, identify all the issues. Oh my God, this thing could go wrong 17 different ways. It's probably best that you don't do it. I'm going to scare the hell out of you, client, by telling you all the ways this can go horribly wrong. And then ultimately you have to decide. That's kind of the traditional model, which is not a good model, right? This is a reason why people are reluctant to go to their lawyers. Oh my God, they're just going to tell me I can't do it and then hit me with a bill for $5,000, right? It's a stereotype, but we've seen it happen. There are lawyers out there who do that and clients who've had that experience, and that, for lack of a better word, sucks. That's not right. So how do you make it happen, right? That's it's a big part of our ethos at our firm, right? This is literally one of our core values, is we are not the lawyers who say no, we're the lawyers who say, yes, let's figure out how, right? This is literally part of our ethos. And, you know, I think that, if I can shamelessly self-promote, I think that's one thing that sets us apart from other law firms, right? Is we often, like, very rarely, really rarely have ever said to a client, please, for the love of God, don't do this. It's happened. It's happened. And I think our clients are familiar enough to know that if we're saying that, we really mean it. But the rest of it is, there's some risks there. I could see a couple landmines over there. That looks like a really high hurdle. And that is definitely going to be an issue, that other one over there. We got to figure it out. Let's roll up our sleeves and figure out how to navigate it and clear these things. And I do think that that's a skill. Not just a lawyering skill, but I think there's a part of just an interpersonal skills of just trying to meet clients where they are, figure out how to be a conduit to them getting what it is that they want done, and not the constant naysay, right? Because that, like I said before, that stereotype that exists, it is a true stereotype, right? We've all heard these stories of, hey, I really wanted to do something, but my lawyer was saying no, and this, and it's too risky, it's too that. We're not reckless. We have a really good track record on wood of getting our clients to do really awesome things without there being any risks or liabilities or things that pop up. But that takes practice. It takes effort. And it also takes, I think, and then this rant will be over, I promise. It takes something that I think not a lot of lawyers have, especially some younger lawyers, for various different reasons, probably, which is kind of a human approach to lawyering, right? Any lawyer can look at a potential transaction and probably identify a lot of the risks and things that it can go wrong. But I think a human lawyer and someone who has a more practical approach, more business-minded approach, which is, again, a big part of who we are and what we do, is, you know, what deal doesn't have risk, right? We've all bought cars, apartments, houses, name your thing, right? You could buy an article of clothing and it doesn't fit you the way that you thought it would, right? There's risk in everything, right? Anytime you transact with anyone or any other thing, there's going to be a risk. So why are we letting that kind of control it, right? We have to mitigate the risk. We have to identify the risk. We have to make sure our client understands it, understands how likely that risk is to pop up. And if it does pop up, how big of a risk it is, right? Is it a $10 issue or is it a $1,000 issue? These are all things we have to think about and figure out, how do we just make sure the client is comfortable with it? We've done everything we can to minimize this concern and get the deal done, get it to yes, right?
Yeah. And I'm guessing in standard law schools, there's not like an empathy for lawyers. Is there?
So, no. Good. It's a great guess. You must know a few other lawyers. Yes. We you know, it's a big problem.
I mean, I know there's ethics, right? But not the empathy, right? Yeah.
No. And it's such a missing skill. It's such a missing skill for lawyers. I know other advisors, it's just as important, but it's a huge gap. And it's, you know, if you can show that empathy, if you could show that human approach where it's here's the legal answer and here's the business answer, let's find something in the middle that works for both of those things. You could really make a difference for a lot of clients.
Yeah. And again, the goal is the transaction, right? So you have two parties who want to do a transaction together. And the key is to reduce the risk short term and long term. Obviously, that's always the goal. The seller wants to reduce their risk. The buyer wants to reduce their risk. And then it's about creating some kind of win-win risk reduction strategy that works between both parties, short term and long term. And then I'm thinking, like, in the moment, it's great, you know, the human approach to lawyering and what you're doing and just really looking at, like, okay, you want to get this deal done. How do we get this deal done? And how do I protect you as my client in this transaction so that, you know, I'm doing my duty and responsibility to you. And then where in that mode is it also about the, you know, the issue spotting, but looking ahead, like, you know, looking into the future and going, okay, what do we need to do and build in this transactional kind of like bubble to ensure that nothing comes up later, right? Because there's in the moment, but there's like you said, that shirt that you buy, it doesn't fit, but now you can't return it. Like, that sucks. But like, how do we make sure something doesn't come back? What is there any standard things or a list of things that just jump off the top of your head of the what to look for and really put in the protection, you know, against the future?
Yeah, just spitballing. I mean, this is where due diligence shines, right? And I think the brokers are probably also now nodding their head and saying, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And it's, you know, we sometimes will tell clients the due diligence is everything, right? We'll draft the contract, we'll negotiate it, the other side will have some things, and that's fine, right? That's not really the heavy lift. The heavy lift is making sure we're kind of sniffing out any potential issues first, right? So that due diligence is worth every penny, right? Sometimes we do flat fee stages for transactional work, and the due diligence will be one part of it. And we'll literally tell the client, like, do this upfront, because who cares about the transaction, the closing and all that stuff, if something in the due diligence ain't right. And you use that, right? And then you do things like indemnification, reps and warranties. You might have some tail insurance types of negotiations, escrow put aside, conditional notes and forgiveness and things like that. There's some tricks up the sleeve. Nothing, you know, unique or unusual or crazy. These are some more standard than others, but these are kind of things to implement to figure out, okay, well, if that happens, then we didn't exactly get what we were hoping to get when we bought this company. So we need to offset the purchase price or get indemnification, get coverage there, or whatever it may be, right? And that could be a liability, a tax issue, a litigation. You bought the company and you had every reason to believe that key employee who's been there for 30 years and can run the business with their eyes closed is going to be there forever. And then like a month and a half later, God forbid something happens to them or they quit or whatever it is. Like, all these things can happen, right? So what are we doing right now, Jason? We're issue spotting, right? What could happen with this deal? How do we contract for that? How do we negotiate for it? And how do we protect ourselves in case it happens? We can't stop someone from, you know, a key employee from leaving, and we hope it doesn't happen, but they could get hit by a car a week after closing. So what happens and what do we do in that event? What levers do we have to pull? And that's a big part of the transaction, right? That's a big part of kind of the skill set that goes into it, of thinking through what are all these potential ways within reason of it going wrong. How do we minimize the chances of that happen and also minimize the fallout from that, right? Sometimes it's a money thing. Sometimes it's you get a right to back out of the deal at the last minute type of thing, whatever it may be.
Yeah. And it's just wild to think of like how many variations. And I think this is the biggest thing as I talk to brokers again on the show and offline, just how many different things and how much time it takes. And going back to your point that you made earlier about the dabblers in business brokerage and in the legal side, like as far as like the type of deals that they get involved with, where it just doesn't work because there's so many things and every deal is different. I mean, I talked to a broker who's been doing it for 20 years. He's like, every deal is different. Every trend, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's in an industry you work with, everything is different. Every situation is different. There's so much that you have to deal with. They own the property, they're leasing it, equipment, inventory, people, all the stuff you're talking about, key employees. So like, I can only imagine what that's like. And obviously you've got to, and this is my plug for you as well. And attorneys like you is that, you know, it's, you get enough experience and you know what to ask and how to, spot those issues. Can't cover everything, but you know what to look for as it develops and then stay ahead, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. This is the differentiator, right? I'll give you a quick spiel that I often give to clients, which is, you know, if you're a litigator, and again, as a former litigator, this is true, right? What I'm about to say is you would kind of look at the other side's attorney and hope that they have absolutely no clue what they're doing. Cause you're like, all right, I'm going to be able to game this system and I'm going to be able to outmaneuver them and do this. because it's a litigation, right? Whereas you said something before, both sides in a transaction want the same thing. It's just how to get there. And I'm doing this hand gesture here, but it's kind of like a Venn diagram, right? There's this side, there's that side, and then there's that overlap in the middle. That's where we need to get. But in transactional work, it's the opposite of what I just said with who you want on the other side. You want the best attorney as possible on the other side, because it'll move along nicely. Well-oiled machine. Seller, you're on for this. Buyer, you're holding the pen on that one. Let's reconvene in four business days and make sure that you're doing this and I'm doing that. Those are the types of things that I think keep a deal moving forward. So I'll tell a client, like, let's hope that the other side not only gets a good, an attorney, gets an attorney to begin with, but gets a good attorney that does transactional work, because you, client, will probably end up spending less money the better their attorney is, because there's less stuff and friction we have to deal with.
Yeah. And it's such a wild counterintuitive, but it's a counterintuitive based on experience response to what most people would expect, right? Correct. Going back to your example, which is fascinating, is like when you're in a litigation mode, you hope they either don't have an attorney or they have a really terrible attorney, because your goal is to win on behalf of your client or whatever, whatever your role is. And so you're hoping that it's not even going to be difficult. Like, it doesn't need to be like the movies where it's all of a sudden this pinnacle courtroom scene where it's like the two rock stars are up against each other for dramatic effect. Like, no, you just want to win. You don't need that difficulty. And to think in the transactional sense, you want the other party to have an attorney, and not just an attorney, but a transactional attorney. So they know what they're doing, to your point, because I want to reiterate it, so that your own party will probably save money, because there'll be less back and forth and less wasting of your time to do all of it, or to fight the other party's divorce attorney who's playing transactional attorney. And all of that mess, right? Which leads into the question I want to ask, like, and I appreciate everything that you're sharing so far. So I'm sure you have some for this, is as a transactional attorney, let's say you're working with, it could be the buyer or the seller. I mean, I guess it could be either one. Like, fill in the blank. If the other side's attorney is X, I know this is going to suck.
Doesn't have a website. I'll start with that one. Sorry to all the lawyers out there who don't have a website. Get a website. Come on. This is ridiculous. Especially these days. If they don't have a website, that is really bad. Maybe a variation of that is like if they're like, JimJones@yahoo.com or something like that for their email address. Again, no offense to the Yahoo and Hotmail users. You usually know you're in for trouble, or they do have a website. And like I said before, you go and I'm probably offending so many lawyers, but what the heck, why not? They're what we call a door lawyer, which is like, they'll just take what walks in the door, right? And that's the example of, we do divorces, DWIs, no contact divorces, bankruptcy filings. Have you been hurt in a slip and fall? Have you been bitten by a dog? We'll also sell your business, and it's like, that's bad. And I will literally, say to my client, I'm warning you, right? And I mentioned flat fees before. Our default is to go hourly. It's less of an issue for flat fee for obvious reasons. But if we're hourly, I will say to the client, you are going to spend more money on this. That is not fair for you. We have to figure out a way with the other side to offset that. Right? Whether that's literally a revision to the deal price, whether it's something else that we get, but I know I am going to have to spend more time fixing things for the other side or explaining things. And I want to be fair. I bill my time. We'll no charge here and there where we can, because we try to keep it fair and we'll waive that time within reason. But Mr. or Mrs. Client, like, we have to do a lot more work because the other side doesn't understand that this is a transaction, not a slip and fall litigation. Right. And everything we're asking for, which is kind of standard stuff, they're fighting like it's, the biggest court battle of their life. When we're just like, hey, you're kind of supposed to just agree to that. That's not a really confrontational term. You may not know that, but that's like pretty standard stuff right there. to keep pulling that thread, and somehow the transaction has now turned more into a contested dispute, which is not what it should be. No one wins in that case except for the lawyers who are going to bill by the hour. And that's not fair. That's not, fair to the client. And you have to give that kind of spiel to the client up front. We've had scenarios like that, by the way, just to and then I'll stop, I promise. But where we've said to the client, you know, listen, we're happy to kind of jump in and see if we could do this, and no guarantees that it'll work. But if you want to speak to the other side and let them know that this is going to probably also cost them some time and money, but that your attorney, me, or someone else on our team knows someone who can represent them, right? And this is like, this is the gold standard if this can happen. And it's happened, you know, a handful of times at this point, where we can actually introduce the other side to an attorney that we know who is competent, great, easy to work with. That helps the deal move along quickly, right? And I know your broker listeners are like, quick is the name of the game here, right? We also want to get to closing as quickly as possible. We have to make sure the landmines don't go off and all those things that we mentioned before, but we want to get this thing done. Everyone knows time kills deals, the back and forth, the friction, all those things, the hiccups that you run into, all those things risk blowing up a deal. So we can sometimes get an attorney on the other side. And I'll say to my client, you know, I know Sue, I know Bill, you know, if it's like 3 o'clock on a Friday and we were really hoping to hear from them before the weekend, I could just shoot them a text and ask them where we're at with it. That really, that having that relationship with the deal attorney helps. And it happens more and more. And I think more than people realize that in the traditional space of M&A, you know, you do run into a lot of the same firms, maybe not the same lawyers, but you run into a lot of the same firms, and there's a rapport that you start to build and you're like, oh, good, I know these people. We had a deal with them, you know, 7 months ago and they were fantastic, right? Or I've seen this person once or twice, or I've heard their names and I know this is not going to be as easy as we want it to be.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you talking about this and think about these deals and how much goes into like even just the lawyer selection and, you know, the strategy behind that and who's on the team. And again, both understanding, I mean, I guess the understanding that time kills deals is a result of being a transactional attorney versus, let's say, a divorce attorney, which is like, let's just keep dragging this out. Like, we will just war of attrition and or billing. And so we'll just keep billing and keep going through and like we'll drag this out as long as you want, you know, which is the opposite of what anyone wants in a transaction.
Yeah. And just to jump in on there, I'm not going to surprise anyone with what I'm about to say, but there are a lot of attorneys out there who just want to find ways to keep billing, right? They don't expect to work with this client again, right? Especially if it's a sell side deal. Ah, you know, they're never going to really come back to me again. Let me get every possible billable hour I can out of this. And suddenly, you know, the provision, you know, the purchase price shall be this, which shall be paid and blah, 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 is being negotiated for like a week and a half. And you're like, I'm not really sure what we're even negotiating here. How much time are you billing your client for this? Because I'm not going to. This is not right. You know, so that's... it's a real thing, right? And that's, I think if listeners can hopefully take away a few things from this. And one of them is, and again, I understand this is a self-serving statement, but it is a true one. And two things can be true at the same time, which is it really matters the lawyer that you have on these deals, right? And that's why I'm sure a lot of your listeners have their kind of go-to attorneys because they know how that person works. They know this person gets the deal done. They don't over-lawyer it. They don't make, you know, what is it, mountains out of molehills type of thing. Like they keep it moving, they do the right thing, and that's how they get paid, that's how you get paid. That's the name of the game right there. It really does matter.
Yeah, and I think that's important. Going back to your billing statement, the only thing I could think of when you were talking about the door lawyers that do everything, right? Like they're the fusion restaurant that has everything on the menu and they can do everything. nothing is amazing. It's just everything. Like, you know, like a Cheesecake Factory menu where it's like 26 pages. A business transaction that comes through their door as that door attorney example, that's like a windfall because this is like a huge, you know, if you think of like the slip and fall and all those other things where it's like contingent and this and that, like this is a, oh man, this is lots of hours. This is billable. It's a big transaction happening. And, you know, I could see that dynamic at play, which is just unfortunate for everyone involved. So, all right, I have some more stuff I want to talk to you about, but it's going to be in the after show because I have some specific questions around your transition in the firm and your role. And I want to talk about that when we talk about like what you've been doing, where you're going next in the future. So for now, let's move on to the broker growth strategies and tips. So obviously you're not a business broker, everyone listening so far, anyone who's still tuning in after 30 something minutes,
hopefully, and
gathering all this info. I know they are, like, again, you know, this is what was so exciting when you and I first spoke, is I'm like, okay, having someone like you come on the
show. If you're listening to this and thinking, I need this level of authority, I just don't have time to build it, that's exactly what business broker growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. That's what we do here. We build that whole thing for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and the authority signals, everything we've talked about here on the podcast. So if you want to add impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it could look like for your business.
This is what was so exciting when you and I first spoke, is I'm like, okay, having someone like you come on the show where this is what you do, just like when I had Mitchell Beinhocker on the show,
and it's great,
just
like, great attorney.
And it's crazy and great that you guys know each other and have done stuff together. And I think, like, anytime I can have someone like you on the show providing this, like, behind the curtains insight at scale, I think it's always amazing. So I know people are still tuning in. So let's talk about the growth. Now, obviously, this is a broker growth show, so this would be for business brokers, but marketing and growth and strategy and sales and pipeline, all of that is pretty much always the same. And so when you think about your list for growth for you and or the suggestions for business brokers, what do you have on that list?
Yeah, in no particular order of importance. And I love this topic right now, because I was thinking about it ahead of time. Spoiler alert, you and I talked about that we would be talking about this. So hopefully I didn't spill the beans there too much. But it's something I speak about with our newer attorneys at our firm as well, because I think this works for brokers, it works for lawyers, it works for professional service providers who are trying to build up their book, establish their credibility, do something with their career. The first one is help others, right? And that's not just a, hey, I can help you buy or sell a business. It's a, I can introduce you to a broker. I can introduce you to a CPA who can talk to you about valuation. I can introduce you to a sell side specialist who, you know, might help you over the next 2-3 years implement certain practices and processes that'll help you get, you know, 3x what your current valuation would be, right? Like, I've got no skin in that game. I don't get a referral fee. I don't get a free lunch or dinner. It's just, I'm just looking to help. This is a true story. I was actually on a call with someone yesterday, believe it or not. And I've known her for about 10 years. She's a successful business owner in New Jersey. And we spent about almost a little shy of 40 minutes on a call yesterday. She's thinking about selling her business, doesn't know if it's going to be in a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now. And she didn't even know what she didn't even know, right? And it was just a conversation where we were just talking. And at the end of it, it ended up with, let me put you in touch with this person. Let me put you in touch with that person. And I reached out to those people afterwards. And I said, hey, I've known this woman for a really long time, super sweet. She needs just a little guidance. She's not ready to make a move yet, but I would love if you could just kind of her and give her some insights, right? Call in some favors, so to speak, not asking anything too crazy. I'm helping this woman, right? I just want her to be happier. Is it completely selfless? No, of course. At the end of the day, if she goes through a transaction, I would love to be the attorney that helps her. But at the end of the day, I'm also a good person. I like to help people. And I think people know when that is genuine and sincere. If you could help others, you know, that is, there's no other way. You know, it's all the cliches that we've heard since we were kids, you know, the karma, what you get is what, you know, what you get is what you get type of thing. All, I'm going to botch like 5 of these. I'm not good with cliches, but you get the idea. So I think helping others is a good one. Along those lines, we always, and I'm a big fan of going a little beyond just helping people, give away answers freely. If you do have lawyers who are listening to this, that's probably like, you know, they probably just fell out of their chairs. you're supposed
you
to
just, you just cut their billables by 10%.
I know, right? And it's like, but along those lines, like, we give away a lot of free legal advice, and I'm perfectly okay with that, because it builds rapport, it builds trust. Again, we're good people, so it is sincere. not completely selfless. We do want them to think about us at some point, right? Whether it's for their types of matters or referrals down the road. We know lawyers who we've been on calls with lawyers where a prospect will ask a question and or a referral source will ask a question. And they said, well, that's legal advice. I can't really give that to you unless I bill you for it. And I'm like, explain to them what the legal concept is. You don't need to like hold their hand and do the thing for them, but like talk to them. Like imagine you're sitting at the bar having a beer with someone. Give them some free legal advice. Give them, if you're a financial advisor, give them some free, you know, financial advice, right? If you're a broker, kind of show them behind the, you know, under the hood how a transaction works. Don't say, well, you got to retain me first before I can tell you what happens, you know, what due diligence is. Explain this stuff to them. So we're big fans of giving away answers freely. We think that that is, it's the right thing to do. It helps people. It builds trust. It builds rapport. You know, and I think that applies for lawyers, you know, believe it or not, but it also applies for brokers as well. Staying in touch post-closing, I think is huge. A lot of, again, lawyers, brokers, I'm sure, I don't want to speak for everyone. You know, the deal is done and there's that typical, you know, congratulatory email. Oh my God, this was great. Congratulations. Great working with you. Thanks for your trust in us and our firm. And, you know, we wish you nothing but the best and maybe even send like, you know, a basket or a bottle of wine or champagne or something like that. Stay in touch post-close, right? You know, the best way to grow your book of business, your referral sources, your pipeline and all these things is the people who have already said yes to you and have worked with you, right? So why is it over when the transaction's closed? To me, that's crazy. And I know so many attorneys, again, I don't know about brokers, but I know so many attorneys who the second the deal is closed, they're like, all right, where's the next deal coming from? Let me look everywhere else. But the person who just paid you a lot of money to buy or sell their business, you know, that person's going to be your best advocate, right? I want them to talk to their friends and family and colleagues about the great work that we did. And hey, if you're going to, you know, buy or sell a business, you got to call Damien and his firm. They helped us out. They did good work. Life gets busy. Business gets busy. They're going to forget about you in like 4 or 5 months from now because they have all these other things to work on. Stay in touch and do it genuinely, right? Go back to the first couple points. Reach out to them. Hey, I saw this article that was, you know, you have a restaurant client, for example. That was, oh my God, all the restaurants in New York City, this is a new regulation that applies. You know, thought I'd send it over to you. Help them out. Give them some free advice on it. Give them your thoughts on it. It's a touch point. Stay in touch with those people. And then probably another one would be, and I apologize because I feel like I'm going through these at a high speed, but we could obviously unpack some of them. Some to the right buyers. I think, you know, we are guilty of this. Our firm is about a little over 7 years old. In the very beginning, you know, we probably said yes to more clients than we should have. I see the face you're making. This is probably a common thing, right? And I don't think this is unique to lawyers or brokers or professional services. I think this, anytime you are building out your career, your book, you kind of try to cast that wide net, right? And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, but at a certain point you have to rein it in, right? And you have to take more of a sniper or targeted, you know, rifle approach as opposed to a shotgun approach. Making sure you're working with the right buyers, right? There's enough work out there. I truly believe that if it's not the right fit for you and your firm and your culture, your company, you're not going to necessarily do your best work product. Not intentionally, but it's just not going to be there. You're not vibing with the client. You're not happy about the engagement. Perhaps you're resenting a little bit saying yes to this. I shouldn't have said yes to this. My God. And it just, that plays out in no ways that are good, right? Sure, you'll make some money, right? And the thing will get done and all will be ultimately okay. But I do think focusing on the right types of clients, like the ICP, right? The ideal client profile, whatever terms you want to use here, I think has been a game changer for us as a law firm. I know I'm not the only one who speaks about this and who feels the same way of, it's okay to say no to some things. always say no and then say, but here's someone who I think actually might be the right fit, right? Going back to helping others, right? That's a really good way of helping others, right? It's not no, sorry, wish you the best of luck. It's no, this isn't for us, but I actually think one or two of these other people, give them a call. I'll give them a heads up that you might reach out. They might be the right fit. Talk to them and they'll make their own decision. But really focusing on that right client to help, I think is a huge growth hack, because it's you do better work, you're happier. And quite frankly, the client feels that. They experience that. We've all been, I think, clients of other providers where when things are going well, both sides kind of know, hey, I'm really happy I'm paying you about to do this thing for me. And yeah, I'm really happy you're paying me to do this thing for you too. And we're vibing, things are good. Clients pick up when it's a good fit. They also pick up when it's not.
Yeah. And I love that, because I the whole list that you went through, I think, is so valuable. So helping others first, give away answers, stay in touch, sell to the right buyers. It's okay to say no. That's the subtitle for that last one. Yeah. And I think, you know, all professional service people, salespeople, and business brokers, I know, do it as well in the beginning. It's like, say yes to everyone, take on every listing, take on every client, and then regret a whole bunch of them. And then realize, like, what are the personalities you like? The business types you like? What are the red flags to watch out for? What do you know is not going to result in a successful transaction? Like, you know, what's not going to work versus what is going to work? And I think that's great. And then the other parts I just love, right? It's like all of this is from an abundance standpoint, right? Which is like, there's enough people on the planet to do business with that you want to do. And it's okay if you give away some free advice and you help. You know, it's fascinating to think about your field in particular, because to your point, the legal field generally feels very transactional down to the minute, where it's not just like it's in this meeting. It's like, I'm going to bill you down to the smallest fraction of time. And so, like, you don't expect anything for free. And so when you yourself and your firm gives information for free, or you're willing to answer questions, yeah, and it's not being billed, like, feels like this amazing bonus that they wouldn't get anywhere else, where it's like, holy cow, that was, you know, that's, you know, like when restaurants started giving free refills on beverages, like, oh my God, this is amazing. I wasn't expecting this. This is the best thing ever. Right. And so, but it's so counterintuitive to what people expect from your profession, and professionals in general, where, you know, it's just like, if you had something wrong at the house, like a plumbing issue, and a plumber comes in and says, here's what to do, I'm not even going to charge you, like, here's what to take care of. Like, you're going to have so much feeling of goodwill towards that person that you probably either hire them when you have a real issue, or you'll refer them to other people. And like, to what you said many times, it's not that you're expecting something. Obviously, you'd love the business that comes out of any conversations, but that's not why you're doing it, right? It's just for the giving first and helping others. And I think that's amazing. And then what's always is fun with humans as well, is if you think about what you're saying, like, answer some legal stuff, give some advice, give whatever. It's like, if that's what you're giving away for free, imagine what they get if they pay you, right? Like, just imagine what you could do for them fully. You know, that's still available. So I love that list. And I think it's great, again, like you said, to set this up for you, for lawyers, for basically anybody. Like, it's just a great list.
Yeah. And thank you for that. The recap of that is good. And once again, I'm like furiously nodding my head, because we're also mindful, right? We're lawyers. We know all the stereotypes that exist about our industry, and like 99% of them are true. No one is really happy to pick up the phone to talk to a lawyer, even if what they're excited to do is, you know, buy this really cool business or sell their business and make a ton of money and retire to the beach, you know, with a cigar in hand type of thing. They're not exactly like looking forward to speaking to Mr. or Mrs. Lawyer, whatever it may be. So how do you change that experience? How do you show them it's okay? I truly mean it. We're going to help you. No, you're not going to get a surprise bill in via email after this call for some exorbitant amount. You're going to, you know, it's going to be a good experience. And it's like, imagine being a law firm, understanding all those stereotypes, and then disproving as many of them as possible, ideally all in one shot. That's the name of the game. That's the gold standard. And again, I think that's true for business brokers. It's true for a lot of different professional service providers, is understand kind of what the client is expecting. That is not exciting, not good, and they're not happy about, they're terrified about, and try to do the exact opposite, you know? And just, that's kind of the name of the game, right? It's kind of be the for us, we, like someone once said, you're like the least law firm we've ever worked with. And I'm like, I take that as a compliment. And they're like, oh, it's meant as a compliment. And I'm like, all right, good. Just I was going to take it that way regardless, but thank you for confirming.
Yeah, and it's fascinating too, because for years, like when I was focused more on sales and coaching and consulting and training, you know, I get questions constantly. It's like, okay, but what's the one tip that would help me be a better salesperson or to close more deals? And you can't, the advice and suggestions different for each person, right? So there's no one size fits all. And I came up with, okay, here's the one size fits all. Just do the exact opposite of what you think a salesperson is supposed to do, right? When in doubt, just do the exact opposite of what you think salespeople, quote unquote, do. And you will close more deals and people will appreciate you because no one likes salespeople, right? And so it's funny hearing you say that, like, about your industry as well. It's like, just do the opposite and you'll win.
It's spot on, right? If like, you know, the typical lawyer or law firm experience is this, do that, right? You'll stand out. I think it will work over time, so long as it's not, you know, unethical, crazy, unlawful, all those nutty things. But it's a great way to stand out, right? And I think people are, you know, perhaps with brokers too, right? There's probably this assumption that it's like, you know, if you're on the sell side, you're gonna put me in touch with the first buyer that comes across the table because you just want to get us to close so you can get your check and all this good stuff. And acknowledge that. Call that assumption and that stereotype out, right? Just like we call out the assumption that, you know, we're going to naysay everything and then we're going to hit you with a crazy bill and you're not going to even understand what the bill means, but you have to pay it in 10 days or, you know, we're going after you type of thing. Explain to them, hey, that's not how this is going to work. You know, here's what it looks like from our perspective. And I think that wins people over. It's the long term. It's the long game, right? If you're looking to make as much cash as you possibly can in the next 12 months, probably ignore everything I said because you're kind of turning away business. You know, the number of times we've said to prospective clients, hey, would love to work with you on this deal. You don't need us to do anything right now. You need to talk to this broker first. You need to talk to your CPA first. You need to talk to your key employee first to figure out kind of where their head's at. We're not going anywhere. We're here. Give me a call when things kind of progress, but hold on to your money. I don't want your money just yet. And figure these four things out first before you hire any lawyer. And the client's like, am I allowed to curse on this? I should have asked that in the beginning.
Yeah.
All right. Shit. Yeah. That would happen, right? All right. Now you've unleashed. I like to curse a lot. You know, that's talking about tangents from before. I was once told by a partner at my first law firm that I didn't curse enough. And that cursing was a sign of intelligence and understanding human emotion.
Interesting.
I don't know how true that is.
We're
almost an hour in and I only have one curse so far. So we're all right. But you know,
that'll be the after show for people tuning in.
That's right. That's right. I love it.
So on that note, I want to finish our main episode here. There's a bunch of stuff, including the deal that got away. I want to talk about in the after show, the after show questions. I want to talk about your firm, where your evolution on your side, what you're excited about coming up for people tuning in. For anybody who wants to get a hold of you, I know they can find you. The website is WeinsteinKlein.com. The link will be in the show notes. They can find you on LinkedIn. Your email will be in the show notes as well. Super excited for you being here and hope people tuning in got a lot of value. Again, behind the curtains to see, you know, on the transactional attorney side, and everyone tuning in, please reach out to Damien and chat with him, interact with him, follow what he's putting out there, and just kind of use that as a model of what it should look like in the transactional side. Damien, thanks for being here and for sharing so much. I mean, you know, again, this kind of goes to your parameters you said on the growth side of giving away so much stuff of your time and your energy and your wisdom. So thanks for being here for me and the audience.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And for everyone tuning in, I appreciate you being here. Again, I hope you got a lot of value from this. We'll see you in the after show. And until then, remember, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show, hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.